Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And Charles Cook of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Charles, hardly a slow beginning to the year politically. We've got good news, bad news, and crazy news, as always, for our wonderful listeners today. And let's start with the good news, as usual. And while it may be a bit symbolic, the House Republican majority started this last year, and they did it again this morning on the House floor. And that's a simple reading of the Constitution of the United States. And given the first 4 years of this administration and what we're probably going to see over the next 4 years, it's a good reminder to the American people of what the founders actually allowed the federal government to do, what they didn't. I know it's kind of an annoying hurdle for the president every once in a while, and sometimes for members of both parties, but to root us once again in what we're all about as a nation is always a good idea.
Yes, perhaps Congress will have a day next year on which they follow the Constitution. No, it is a good thing, although it is sad that it's come to that, in that you would hope the Constitution wouldn't be some sort of feature and it wouldn't be newsworthy when it was put out on the floor and institutions like National Review wouldn't have to celebrate it. You'd hope that it were at the forefront of everything that Congress did. I think just a historical point on this is that when the Constitution first came into effect, the idea of deciding what was and what wasn't constitutional was at that point, firstly, not the Supreme Court's purview, but also was regarded as being the responsibility of every lawmaker and representative and government employee who had taken the oath. In other words, representatives were supposed to say, I will not vote for this bill because I consider it to be unconstitutional. They weren't just supposed to vote for it and see if it got through the court. And it does show you how far we've fallen. On the other hand, I suppose I'm hoping there's a resurgence in fealty towards the Constitution and understanding the Constitution.
Obviously, you've had a lot to take in the year since you've come to America. But when you read the Constitution and you have folks like Ron Paul until recently who often have voted against many bills because it's unconstitutional, now you have folks like Justin Amash doing the same. Do you see them as the guardians of the Constitution, perhaps a little too excessive in that role? What do you think?
Well, I don't think they're too excessive. No, the Constitution is the highest law in the land, and that's one of the reasons it's so important, and it's one of the reasons that it's important for everybody to follow it, even if they don't agree with it. You know, if people don't like what's in there, they need to change it via a constitutional amendment. There is provision for that. It's been done 27 times. But the idea, and we're hearing a lot of this, I don't want to move on to the next martini too quickly, but the idea that has been raised a lot recently that, well, this is just too important for the Constitution is nonsense. It is the highest law in the land, whether people like that or not.
Charlie, you dovetail perfectly into martini number two, and that's the president's press conference yesterday on so many levels, but there were two major issues that were discussed there. One was the debt ceiling, which is about to be breached again here in just a number of weeks. And then, of course, the Democratic push for greater gun control. Here was the president's main mantra on Monday.
Raising the debt ceiling does not authorize us to spend more. All it does is say that America will pay its bills. And we are not a deadbeat nation.
Charles E. basically casts himself as this great deficit hawk, yet somehow has to keep asking for $1 trillion-plus extensions of the debt ceiling at the same time. So I'm not sure how he weds the two together there. He also did a very brazen, I think, attempt to demonize the Republican Party by saying that if anything goes wrong, it's their fault, not mine, pointing out that veterans' benefits and Social Security checks will be the first things to get cut out if, in fact, there is any sort of government shutdown or a lack of a deal on the debt ceiling. And then, of course, he talked about 19 different things he could do unilaterally when it comes to gun control. So if he's spoiling for a fight, I think he's going to get him. And I think there's a lot of people, some who may have not liked Mitt Romney, some who may have just thrown up their hands at the choice last year, who should feel really dumb right now for either sitting out or not exercising their chance to get rid of this president.
On that, we'll agree entirely. The Social Security and veterans point is pure demagoguery, and it's untrue. That would only be the case if the government chose to prioritize other things above those, which it doesn't have to do. Kevin Williamson has a good piece on National Review today about this. In terms of what the president said, he's right in some regards. For a start, it isn't new spending. It is borrowing to pay the bills. But he would have a lot more credibility saying that, and also pointing out he's right in saying a default would be a disaster. If, firstly, he hadn't voted to prevent a debt ceiling raise in 2006, which he did. Secondly, if there was any indication whatsoever that we're not going to be in exactly the same position a year, 18 months from now, having to raise the debt ceiling. I mean, if you had a member of your family who had maxed out their credit cards, yes, it would be incumbent upon them to pay them back. But part of any conversation about how you're going to pay those credit cards back would be some sort of counseling as to how not to get yourself into the same position over and over and over again. And that's what's happening with this president. It's that's why Republicans are insisting on conditions, because it is one thing to point out that it would be a bad thing not to raise the debt ceiling. It would. But I think Americans are fed up with being in the same position over and over again with no stop to the spending.
Also, the thing I think that gets a lot of people upset is this idea that spending cuts have actually been achieved somehow along the way in this first administration at best. And of course, sequestration still hanging out there. You're talking about cuts in projected increases in spending. So it's
right,
like saying you're going to raise your kids' allowance from $5 to $10 a week and say, well, we're only going to raise it to $8, and then say you cut spending. Well, you didn't. And that's just Washington math that drives people absolutely crazy.
On the second point, which was the executive orders for gun control, leaving aside the wisdom of gun control, the president can do some things with executive orders. The executive branch can choose, for example, who to prosecute, and it can tinker around the edges with how it enforces certain laws. If the president were to come out tomorrow and say, I am only going to take action in areas that are within my remit, that would be his right. I think where he makes everybody nervous is that he hasn't shown a great respect for the separation of powers before. And you can level some of those charges at George W. Bush as well. This isn't a partisan point. But this president has been particularly brazen. He told Univision that he couldn't do anything on immigration because he wasn't a king, and then he did exactly what he said he couldn't do with an executive order. And I think Americans are right to be nervous at the prospect he's going to walk out and say, Congress won't do this. It's too important for Congress. It's too important for the Constitution. I'm just going to do it anyway. Hopefully he will prove those of us who are suspicious of him wrong.
Now, as you mentioned, the track record isn't fantastic on that front, but he's got an opportunity to show some fidelity to the Constitution that he will take the oath on two Bibles on Monday. So let's hope that he actually means it this time. On to martini number three now, Charles. And I think a lot of folks who paid close attention to the Newtown massacre, and just about everybody did, I would imagine, might remember a man named Gene Rosen. He was the older man, had the white beard. He was a guy who lives close to where the shooting happened and found about six kids at the end of his driveway after their teacher had been killed, who had run away from the school. And he took them in and he fed them and you know, kept them calm until their parents could be located and so forth. And he was obviously very emotional, very shook up by the situation, and he told his story a number of times. Well, according to a new piece by Salon.com, Mr. Rosen has been essentially getting harassed, hang-up phone calls, slightly threatening calls, emails, and basically with the assertion that he's a crisis actor. This whole thing is a government conspiracy, Sandy Hook truthers on the same line as the 9/11 truthers and so forth. And Charles, obviously, as we've just discussed from martini number two, the way the Obama administration is in kind of a crass political way trying to restrict Second Amendment rights in the wake of this, there is endless criticism for their tactics on this. But to somehow contend that this horrific tragedy didn't happen and is somehow a horrific tragedy with some sort of giant government conspiracy as just begs the imagination.
It is appalling and it's a disgrace. And those people who are peddling this conspiracy theory should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves. I think your mention of the way in which the government has jumped on it is relevant here. And I would advise those who are critical of the government not to go anywhere near this route. I think, as we've seen with 9/11 and, well, in human history, this is a normal human tendency. It's a logical fallacy which runs like this. They look at who is benefiting politically from an act, and they criticize, in very many ways, quite rightly, political opportunism that springs up after a tragedy. And then they go one step too far and say, well, if this person has benefited from that, they must have carried it out. And we saw this nonsense after 9/11, where George W. Bush's popularity soared, and the Iraq war, which wouldn't have happened if it weren't for 9/11, went through Congress, and then Bush won a second term. We saw people, crazy people, say, well, he must have sat and planned 9/11 then. It makes absolutely no sense. It was an awful charge. And, you know, those on the right and on the conspiracy theory side of American politics who have indulged this idea that because gun control advocates are benefiting from Sandy Hook, that the government or they must have had something to do with it, are just as wrong as the 9/11 truthers. And to drag this man through the mud like this after what he went through and what he saw and what he did is a disgrace.
There's a couple of things you want to take away from here. First of all, Salon doesn't really say how many times this has happened, but for any of this to happen is just absolutely outrageous. And I don't want to give too much attention to them because obviously that just feeds the oxygen. But it's also important to point out that this type of despicable behavior is out there. So there's kind of a fine line. So we probably won't mention it too much more. But just to know that people who are suffering up there still in a great way are suffering additionally as a result of this insanity. So it needs to be mentioned. Charles, always great to have you with us. Thanks for pinch hitting for Jim today. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Charles Cook of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Jim and me for the Wednesday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.